This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Talks a lot about the whole connection that we have with between the American West and open space, and how that is really perhaps the first thing that's obviously jeopardized when we start doing all kinds of intense energy extraction. I wonder if you could talk about that in terms of the Rocky Mountain Front in Montana and your response both to the landscape and to some of the development proposals that you got wind of when you became the forest manager of the Lewis and Clark National Forest.
Yes. When I arrived on the forest, we were it was in 1995, and we were just started an analysis of which lands might be leased for oil and gas, and if they were, under what stipulations would they be leased. And part of my forest was on the east face of the Rocky Mountain Front in Montana. And so, and that was an area of great interest because it was part of the overthrust belt. The geology, of the folded geology underneath that area where the limestone cliffs of the Rocky Mountains literally crash into the plains and jut straight up. That was an area of great interest with the oil and gas industry, not only because of some preliminary shows of fuel there, but also because there was a lot of development starting up in the up in Canada along their portion of the Rocky Mountain Front. And indeed, there was a lot of gas and oil up there, but the geologic structures actually got narrower and narrower and more shallow as you head south. And so the geologic information that I had suggested that there was indeed some pockets, but nothing really economically viable.
And yet, what was the plan that you became aware of as you started taking down the forest?
There were a number of leases that had already been sold all along the front, and some companies were interested in starting to drill. But the issue at hand that I was dealing with in the environmental impact statement was lands that had not yet been leased, because I did not have the authority to withdraw existing leases.
Now, it seems to be common wisdom among anybody who's dealt with the Forest Service that generally they have never seen an extractive resource industry, whether it's mining or logging here in the Northwest, that they don't say yes to. So what kind of pressures did you have on you to continue that rubber stamp process that the Forest Service is so well known for?
I wouldn't call it rubber stamp, but I would say that how I define it is that typically the Forest Service feels compelled to give industry or anyone requesting anything from the National Forest at least half of what they're asking for, if not more. But half seems to be the minimum. And I didn't think that was the right paradigm to be following. I think that a careful look at the ecology of the place, as well as the relationship that people have to that landscape, is tremendously important. And so in making that decision on the front to put a moratorium on leasing, I did not have the authority to stop all leasing permanently, but I put a 20-year moratorium on any further leasing. And so that was done because of the ecological significance of the place. It's absolutely outstanding in terms of the ecosystems and the habitats that it provides for wildlife, but also because of people's sense of place, their attachment to the landscape, the value that they put on the landscape that's far beyond any goods or services that one is going to get from them.
Well, you'd been in the Forest Service for quite a while before you came to Montana, and I'm wondering what made you have a different approach than, let's say, forest managers in many other parts of the Rocky Mountains. I'm thinking particularly in Utah, where they seem to be very happy to lease land for drilling right around the jewels of the national park mm-hmm. system, like Canyonlands and Arches. So why did you see things differently than a lot of other forest managers seem to see them?
It could have been from my training, I have a degree in landscape architecture, and so as such, that made me, I think, more sensitive at the get-go to people's relationship to the land. And so as I progressed in the Forest Service, moved into positions of decision making, I used a different rule of thumb. I also tended to have a broader view temporally. You know, I was looking out ahead to future generations and recognizing that public land managers are actually the voice for the unborn, and that's unborn of all species, trees, plants, animals, humans. So I felt that I needed to look at hundreds of years out what would be the highest and best use of the land, as well as the current highest and best use. And it was pretty obvious to me that the values on the front were far more than a little bit of energy that might be extracted. And so once I started looking at it through the lens of an ecosystem, then it was pretty obvious what needed to be done.
Well, this morning we're talking with Gloria Flora, who is a former forest supervisor for the Lewis and Clark National Forest along the Rocky Mountain front of Montana, and we're talking this morning about her fight to stop plethora of oil and gas drilling leases from proliferating all around this very unique ecosystem. And right now we're going to take a break from talking with Gloria and talk with Lynn and Pear about another ecosystem that we really need to support and defend here, and that's the ecosystem of community radio.
Absolutely, Barbara. And it's a real easy way to do that. You can call 877-500-5266 here at KABU and contribute. There are many things you can do. You can get the book this morning, Energy Overdevelopment and the Delusion of Endless Growth, which I love. That is such, we see that here in our wonderful Portland and everywhere else, that growth is all there is. And it is, yet people are trying to have their body skinny and the city large. I just don't get it. But you can get this book for a $90 minimum pledge. Which can be, what is that per month, Pear? Let's see, that's $0.25 a day.
Oh, that's what
that's 25 cents a day, and you can have that taken out in 12 lovely installments and become a sustaining member here at KBOO.
Actually, I want to interject that we have two different versions of this book.
Oh, yes, you're
One's got the pictures.
There's one for 60, that's right, for
right.
60.
So the for a $90 pledge, you get the coffee table version, which is immense.
Barbara.
It's an immense book. They sent me a copy of that too.
Yeah.
And it has it's for those people who really want to educate their guests.
Yes, have a good conversation
a
over
good
that coffee
table because there's these incredible photographs of the tar sands mining and mountaintop removal mining and the oil and gas leasing that we're talking about in Montana and in North Dakota. So you can really horrify your guests with these great, beautiful photographs of really horrific things and get a conversation going, get people organized, get people active just from your coffee table. Now, if you would rather read in bed, there's the reader version, which is for the $60 pledge, and that doesn't have the photographs, but you can lie on a horizontal position and hold the book over your head and be able to enjoy reading it.
So you've got choices here this morning.
That's right. Why?
Great choices. But to get either of those, you have got to call in at 877-500-5266 or go online at kboo.fm and support Barbara's show and support KBOO at the same time.
Or come on down to 20 Southeast 8th and visit our little thriving ecosystem here. See all the flora and fauna that roam around down here and be part of our thriving community. You know, I don't know, I guess we grow a little bit every year. We try to, but we're not in endless growth. We're in endless education, endless knowledge, endless entertainment. That's us, you know.
And that kind of growth is incredibly valuable.
Development. It's not growth, it's development.
It's development.
We don't get bigger, we get better.
That's right. And that is valuable educational development, and that is something you can support by calling 877-500-5266 or come on down to 20 Southeast 8th this beautiful morning. Ride your bike. We have great bike tire upper things that are the shape of headphones.
Yeah, so we got a big mural on the front of our corporate headquarters.
You can't miss us. You can't miss our big corporate headquarters.
Right.
No.
Now, if you're from the 21st century, you might just be behind a computer right now, and it's very easy to join by just clicking on the tip jar at the upper right-hand corner of our website, which is kboo.fm. And maybe you're streaming our radio signal somewhere across the country or across the world. It's easy for you to donate as well, just doing it online. Now, we know here at KBOO we like to really emphasize community, and we like to emphasize the old-fashioned kind of community where you actually hear people's voices and you talk to them and you meet them in person. But there's another community here on the internet as well, which I think we are tapping into, and it certainly can't supplant the kind of in-person relationship you have. But here at KBOO, one of the things we're really striving for is to improve our web presence, and we need a lot of money in order to be able to do that. And so it's really important that you call 877-500-5266 and become a member right now, or, as I said, go to our website, kboo.fm, and in the upper right-hand corner, there's a little donation jar you can click on, or I think just about any place on the front page. If you click,
it won't be hard at all. You'll find it.
It'll take you to a form.
It will be self-evident.
And I think there's all kinds of special little favors you get when you join online as well, for that online world that we are sometimes a part of. And I think we're going to go back to talking with Gloria Flora now, who is a former, she's a former forest supervisor for the Lewis and Clark National Forest and has been in the forefront of trying to stop oil and gas development and other horrific things along the Rocky Mountain front of Montana. So welcome back, Gloria.
Hi, Barbara. And, you know, I really do encourage your listeners to contribute and support their public radio station, because it's informed public that really helps public land managers make the better decisions.
Well, let's talk a little bit about how you inform the public, because one of the things that seemed to work and made you different from many other forest service managers was that you got the public involved. In fact, I remember in your article you mentioned one of the criticisms you received was that you took too much public input and listened too much to the public.
Yes. Isn't that intriguing? Well, it's extremely important to get people involved in public land management decisions, because managers alone can't do it, and also it's scary. You know, it is, people fear for their career. They fear peer criticism, and so when you're in a tribe like an agency, you're really looking for, I mean, some people are really looking for, you know, keeping the boat, don't rock the boat, keep things even, get some credit, don't get any negative input. And one of the ways that you can really buck the system, literally, I mean, one of the ways that I was able to move the ball forward on the Rocky Mountain front in terms of not allowing leasing was because I had a tremendous amount of public support for it. It's not that you need that necessarily, but it sure helps a lot, particularly when you have people saying, well, you've got to give them something, you know, meaning you have to always compromise and always relinquish some precious resource.
And the them you're talking about is not the public now. We're talking about mainly private companies that want to come in and mine or do whatever they're going to do.
Thank you for the clarification. Yeah.
So how did you get the public organized? What did you do to reach out?
I had the benefit of a beautiful landscape that already had a tremendous amount of interest. But the very important thing for a public land manager to do is to convey the fact that they really are listening, that public input really will make a difference, and that, you know, and to demonstrate that responsiveness on occasion after occasion, not just a one trick deal. So I had a long reputation going into the process as a manager who listened and who took public input very seriously. So with that as a reputation, and you know, although I was new to the area, people were checking me out, checking out my history, and when I was showing up at their meetings and engaging with them, was out on the ground with them, they started to believe that they really might make a difference. And, you know, sometimes public involvement can just go on and on and on, and people spend so much of their valuable time participating, and sometimes without seeing any real difference in their contributions of time and thought. And that, you know, that doesn't motivate anybody. So I think you just need to make it clear that you are listening, and then you have to do that. You have to really, really pay attention. We had a good lesson in that. After I left the Forest Service, I returned to Montana and was one of the founders of the Coalition to Protect the Rocky Mountain Front, an informal organization with that includes business people, citizens, organizations, anyone interested in the long-term protection of the front. And in crafting a bill to put before Congress, we turned it over to a local steering committee. We in the, you know, who are members of organizations and who formed the coalition just left it up to the locals to work through this. I mean, we guided them, we supported them, we did whatever we possibly could, but we left the ultimate decision-making up to the locals. And that's a scary thing. You know, you don't know where it's going, you don't have control, but you have to trust that given the right information and given the option, people will typically choose for the good. And I'm talking about the broader public. You know, they get it about wildlife habitat. They get it about future generations. You know, they get it about environmental quality.
Well, in the when you're dealing with the issues of energy extraction in the West, often one of the arguments that's thrown out is we need the jobs, that we are going to move backwards if we protect the environment, that it's either jobs or protecting the environment. And I wonder how your work in stopping the, or at least successfully placing a moratorium on gas and oil drilling in Montana, how that might have, in a way, argued for another way of looking at that seeming dichotomy.
Well, I think that's a great question. Open for rich exploration, because this idea that the environment and the economy are on two opposite ends of a spectrum and never the twain shall meet is simply rubbish. You know, it was a concoction from a political group that thought the messaging would work really well. And it has. It worked incredibly well because people now think that, well, we can't have a clean environment if we want to have jobs. That's I could use a stronger word.
But we're on the radio. You can't do that.
You know, what we see on the, you know, using the Rocky Mountain Front as an example, we had a lot of jobs on the Rocky Mountain Front. There are outfitters. There are guides. There are ranchers. There are recreationists. There are people who are bringing others to see what a wonderful country this is. And so what we found is that, for instance, a perfect example, one of the proponents for drilling on the front was an energy company from Canada, and they were, you know, they had a legitimate lease, and they were proposing this, you know, great jobs option and opportunity but through drilling. And when we got them sit down in a corner and said, okay, tell us what the jobs are. Well, there was about six jobs. Five of them were in Canada and going to be going to skilled members of their company. And the other job was a security watchman or watchwoman. And it was a part-time job. So, they were insisting on drilling, you know, building miles of road, just literally destroying a piece of the landscape, which coincidentally was in a was on some Bureau of Land Management land adjacent to the forest, and it was designated as an outstanding natural area. Now, how you can drill in an outstanding natural area and not destroy it was beyond us. And then, as I said, when we got them to actually spell out what kind of jobs were going to be available, it was nothing compared to the jobs that already existed. And then there's also the other values that draw people and bring money into a community. The communities along the Rocky Mountain Front are very small. The largest is about 5,000 people, and the rest are just populations in the hundreds. And the economic study that we did on the front showed that hunting alone brought in $10 million a year to those communities. And so that provided a lot of jobs. Yes, jobs in service industry, but these are small organizations, small companies, small businesses that don't need a huge amount of input to thrive and keep people gainfully employed and living in a place they love. So, you know, by protecting the landscape, we protect the wildlife. By protecting the wildlife, we provide for hunting opportunities. By providing hunting opportunities, you bring in a bunch of money to the community and a lot of jobs. So the jobs story is you know, I'm certainly not negating the importance of people having jobs. It's good for us psychologically as well as economically, and but it's you don't need to have polluting extractive industries that by and large are conducive to death of people on the planet to have a job.
Well, we're talking this morning with Gloria Flora, who doesn't sound like it, was actually the forest manager, forest supervisor for the Lewis and Clark National Forest, and helped to stop a lot of oil and gas drilling along the Rocky Mountain front in Montana. And we're going to talk now with Lynn and Pear, who are going to tell us why we need to continue to fill the airwaves with the magical, wondrous sounds of KBOO FM.
Well, I think you just heard why we need this station.
Really?
We just heard some interesting information.
And really, really important information for people to know. And if they want to continue to hear this sort of commentary on what is actually happening, like that jobs and the environment actually go together, and the other things that are... listen to this whole story online afterwards. That right now we want you to call 877-500-5266 and contribute to this radio station so more things like this can go out in the air and people can be actually informed and truly informed.
Learn to separate the truth. You know, there is a word that we can use on radio. I call it poopaganda. And that is what we do. We fight the poopaganda here at KBOO. And it's just, it's worth your money, it's worth your time, because you too will get in that habit, that frame of mind, a frame of mind where you seek out the truth and sort of dismiss the chaff, you know. And it's,
I know, I do that when I listen to other radio or TV. I go, just a minute, I talk back to it all the time. Okay,
but they don't
maybe
listen,
I'm
though,
just
do they?
Not a no-no.
But here at KBOO.
Not any more than anyone else. 877-500-5266. What were you saying, Barbara?
Well, I say here at KBOO, we do listen to you. And in fact, I get phone calls and emails from people, and I pay attention to what they have to say. I say 99% of the time. There is the crackpot element that's everywhere. But I actually learn a lot from listeners, and I get ideas for programs from listeners. And people, realize that KBOO is a two-way conversation. And I know that feeling that you have, Lynn, of like listening to the radio or watching television or reading a lot. Reading the Oregonian this morning. And
there, that will do it, too.
Yelling at it. And
it's
just, and feeling like it's not representing what my life is about. It's not representing my reality. Here at KBOO, we are your reality. And it's so nice to tune to 90.7 or tune to KBOO.FM on the web and be realizing that you're hearing your own life being reflected back and amplifying it and giving you more information. And so if you call right now at 877-500-5266 and become a member of KBOO, you are helping to reinforce this energy that KBOO puts out that is keeping our community whole.
Absolutely.
And you can get this book, Energy Over Development and the Delusion of Endless Growth, for a $60 pledge. You can get the text version, the book.
Read in bed version.
That's the read in bed version. It won't crush you.
We don't want you to die reading this book.
No.
You might die if you don't read it. But anyway, and then for a $90 pledge, you get the big version.
Start a conversation in your living room version.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yes. You know, just don't put your wine glass down on all those lovely pictures of trash landscapes. So
for $90 for a $90 contribution, which can be 25 cents a day, if you go through our electronic funds transfer, which our wonderful phone volunteers will just walk you through that really fast. But you got to call 877-500-5266 to make all this happen, or go to kboo.fm and select Locus Focus.
That's right. Do it now. Be part of the KBOO family. And, you know, KBOO is like a learning experience. I've learned so many things just being at KBOO that they never taught me in college or high school or anything like that. You wonder why, you know? Well, you find out why at KABU.
When you hear a book, someone interviewing someone about a book on KABU, we have actually read the book.
That's true.
And almost every author goes, wow, you read it? Yes, we do that sort of homework here because we are interested in an actual interview and some quality radio, which is what you will get if you call 877-500-5266 and to contribute to keep us going on the air, to keep us going for, we've been going for 45 years, let's make it another, 100 years.
We don't look 45, though, do we?
Not in the least.
Well, Lynn and Pat, thanks very much, and we'll be back talking to you again in a few minutes. We're talking this morning here on Locus Focus with Gloria Flora, who is a former forest supervisor for the Lewis and Clark National Forest in Montana along the Rocky Mountain Front. And she is the author of an article that's in this coffee table book and also reader we've been talking about. The book's called Energy Overdevelopment and the Delusion of Endless Growth. Her article is called Fighting Gas and Oil Development in Montana's Rocky Mountain Front. So welcome back, Gloria.
Thank you, Barbara.
And one of the things that really stood out in your article was your describing of one of the ways that you get people to understand what's really at stake is to take them on these flyovers. And you describe the difference between the landscape in Montana by plane and the landscape of Alberta, just to the north of you. So I want to talk about what the impact of being able to see these two very different terrains has on people.
Well, people have a hard time envisioning what development, energy development, looks like because they keep hearing things like, oh, it's a small footprint, oh, it's back where people can't see it, it's away, wherever away might be. And if you don't have that, the imagination, and you haven't seen that development actually on the ground, the scope, the scale, the impact, it's really hard to wrap your head around that. And I know that when we took the candidate for governor of Montana some years ago, took him up in a flight, that was the first thing out of his mouth when we hit the Canadian development. He said, oh my God, he said, they said it would be a small footprint. He said, it's a mess. Look at that, a network of roads and pipelines. And I can even see them flaring gas from up here. And what is that plant over there? It was a sweetening plant. And so, you know, it made quite an impression on him.
Actually, I want to interject. I read that in your book, and I was thinking, that's all well and good. But then he became a real proponent of the heavy haul corridor through Montana and Idaho.
Yes, he did.
So what happened to Bill?
Well, it was... there's no predicting where a politician's going to go and what necessarily motivates them. He was a proponent of protecting the Rocky Mountain Front, but he made a number of other slip-ups, in my personal opinion. And, you know, I think that the corporate contributions play a very strong role in which way people roll, which way politicians roll. And... unfortunately, I think that there was some money coming in, and so therefore, you know, a favor going out. Now, having said that, I don't know that for sure, but that seems to be a pattern that we see. But some people just don't pause to think of the consequences, of the long-term consequences, and they don't reflect on the what's called EROI, Energy Return on Energy Invested. And it seems as though if something is doable, even if it's not reasonable, it's not environmentally correct, and it's not a positive energy return on energy invested, as long as it's doable and someone can make a buck out of it, it seems to go forward. And so the concern that I've had, for instance, you know, people scoff, well, peak oil, but look at all the natural gas we just found, and oh, peak oil's crazy, it's a, you know, ridiculous notion, ha-ha. Well, no, it's not a ridiculous notion, because when we first started to use oil, the energy return on energy invested was 1 to 100. That means one input of energy, be that raw material or physical energy or electrical energy or whatever, one unit of energy produced 100 units of energy out. And so that was an incredible return on investment. Well, now we're looking at places like the tar sands, and we see an energy return on energy invested of about, depending on which studies you read, of anywhere from 3 to 1 to 6 to 1. So that can't continue. You know, likewise with natural gas, a well that has to be fracked, it requires 4 times more steel and millions of gallons more water, not to mention the toxins that it's putting into the Earth's crust. So that is not sustainable. And so I think the problem with some politicians is they do not consider sustainability, they don't consider energy return on energy invested, and they don't consider the long-term consequences of what it is they're promoting.
Well, in the few minutes that we have left, you were successful in pretty much stopping the drilling along the Rocky Mountain front, but it seems that now there's pressure not so much coming down from Canada as what's be as much of an energy producing giant as Alberta. Now the pressure seems to be coming from North Dakota. I'm wondering if you can talk about what your challenges are in the near future and what you're planning to do.
Well, the challenge right now that I'm focusing on is getting the Rocky Mountain Front Heritage Act passed, and that's an act that will protect the Rocky Mountain Front. As far as working specifically in the Bakken field in North Dakota, I'm not focusing on that particular location, but I am shifting into overall work nationally on fracking. I've been involved with the Oil and Gas Accountability Project, which is connected to Earthworks, a great organization I happen to be on the board of, so I'm particularly proud of them. But we've been in the Oil and Gas Accountability Project, we've been talking about the dangers of fracking for over 10 years. And it's not until fracking really started to show up in people's backyards in Pennsylvania, in New York, that a whole lot of attention suddenly got turned on fracking and what this process actually was. And it's been happening throughout the West. It's particularly seems virulent on Indian reservations, and it's a very, very dangerous process. I know people like to make light of it. People in industry say, oh, it's nothing, but we won't tell you what we're putting in the fracking fluids. We won't tell you that it can get into your water table and it can poison you. And there's plenty of examples of that. And that's just the below-ground impacts. The above-ground impacts are just as deleterious to people's health. There's plenty of examples of that.
Now, is fracking something that you're concerned about in Montana, or just mostly concerned about it because it's happening all over the country?
All over the country. Montana is also, but literally all over the country.
So do you feel confident that the Rocky Mountain Heritage Act will pass, and at least you're going to be able to protect this piece of the world that you've been working so hard for the last, 25 years to mm-hmm. protect?
Yes, I'm very optimistic. We have done our homework extensively. We've created an act that has 79% of Montanans supporting, and I realize that, you know, we're talking about federal public land, meaning that everyone in the nation has a piece of that and needs to be concerned. But the people of Montana really stepped up to the plate and did a fantastic job on putting together a protection package for long term. You know, I wish there was more wilderness. A lot of people wish there were, you know, changes or it was different. But it's a beautiful example of bipartisanship and compromise but not compromising away the very values that make the place so special.
Well, it's always nice to hear some success stories. And actually, I do remember a piece that you mentioned in your article that was on the PBS show Now a few years ago about protecting the Bitterroot Valley, which is when I first learned about some of the challenges that you've been talking about this morning. Mm-hmm. And it was nice to see in the middle of that, producing that program, that the oil and gas companies, but they terminated the EIS, I understand.
It was the federal government that did it, but you know, here, it's in part luck and part timing and part skill, and our team did a fantastic job of positioning and branding the Rocky Mountain Front in such a way that people understood what the very, very high values were of that place, leading it like it is. But we were also 1 month before George Bush's attempt at getting reelected a second time, and I believe that they realized, A, that the story was going to put the government in in a very truthful light, and it was not going to be flattering, and B, that George Bush had told members of sporting groups that there were places that were too special to drill, but 1 month before the election, I think he realized that he had yet to identify what place that might be, and he wasn't willing to cave on Anwar, and so the Rocky Mountain Front was sitting there just ready for comment, and that's when they decided that the government decided that they had better at least indicate that they weren't blowing smoke.
Well, Gloria, I want to thank you very much for joining us, and maybe we'll touch base again with you because I like to follow fracking. So
that would be an intriguing conversation.
So let's talk more about that in a coming show. So thanks a whole lot. We've been talking with U.S. Forest Supervisor, or former U.S. Forest Supervisor Gloria Flohr, author of the article Fighting Gas and Oil Development in Montana's Rocky Mountain Front. And we're going to talk now a little bit more with Pear and Lynn about why you need to become a member of KABU.
Absolutely.
Well, I think you just heard her exposition of this energy return on energy investment. That is something everybody needs to learn about because it's one reason people are not going to get what they're expecting out of all this drilling.
And Terry on St. Paul is a new member because he must be listening on KBOO.FM, which is another place that you can contribute easily peasily. You just go there, click on the Donate Now button, and it all gets to be really easy for you. Another thing you can do is call 877-500-5266. Do that right now. You've got a few more minutes to contribute to Barbara's show, Locus Focus. And the sooner you get and you do your contribution for this spring membership drive to KABU, the easier the whole time will be. You'll have fun. You'll just be relaxed knowing that you have done your part to keep this amazing radio station on the air. Right, Pear?
Put a spring in your step.
Put a spring in your
step.
Smile
on your
face. Spring forward with KABU.
Yes, that's right.
I want to talk a bit about that energy input and energy return.
That's an important
because
concept.
The concept here at KABU. Let's talk about it. What it relates to here at KABU, because when you call up and you make a pledge for $60 or $90, or I'd really like to see somebody do $10 a month, $120
a
year.
That's a great way to do it.
That's what I do, and it's really not noticeable. $10 a month goes out of your bank account. We do it through electronic fund transfer. You don't really notice it, and yet it adds up to help KABU really thrive. And what comes at the other end is all this programming with very, very, very little overhead compared to a much more corporate radio station. Basically, the money that you put into KABU comes out in almost what would you say, Pear? 100 to 1?
It's been enhanced.
It's been enhanced immeasurably.
Magnified.
Exactly. Because of our volunteer resources, because we really know how to live and act cheaply, because we don't waste, and because we have great imagination and are able to...
We've been scrounging all our lives.
That's right. So give a call right now at 877-500-5266 and become a member of this amazing perpetual motion machine, KABU Radio.
That's
come on
right.
Down to 20 Southeast 8th and see it for your very eyes. Yes,
and
it's
one
right
of the things,
here.
That's right. And as far as nourishment goes, we want to thank restaurants today who have contributed to feeding our hungry volunteers here. Junior's Cafe at 1742 Southeast 12th Avenue, the Laurelhurst Market at 3155 East Burnside, and Funky Puffs at 1313 Northeast Alberta Street. And Terry is a woman who contributed at St. Paul, so thank you very much.
Well, there's a guy named Terry down there. He can contribute, too.
He can contribute, too. We are here. We are for the facts here at KBOO. So you have a few minutes left. Call 877-500-5266. Call it now. You've got a few minutes left, folks, to help us reach our goal this morning. Or bop on down really fast to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue.
That's right. Come on down here. Have a cup of coffee on us. See, meet the people, see where your money goes, see our palatial digs. Yeah, you'll look in vain for the hot tub because it don't exist. I wish it did. It'd be nice, you know, but
here we are. Call 877-500-5266. Please call now to keep this amazing institution going. You can get, for a $60 minimum donation, that's like $5 a month, you can get a ceramic coffee mug, the KABU Boo Air t-shirt. There's a vintage t-shirt and the mobile version of the 2013 Portland Chinook book, which are really great. And that will get you back your $60.
And was mentioned also the energy book, which we have this week. It'll also be around next week, but get your copy now. Either the coffee table version, which is a $90 pledge, or for a $60 pledge, you can get the reader, which is a little less heavy and doesn't have all the photographs.
But the $90 version is going to be would be just a great thing for your coffee table to start conversations, because you, the KBOO listeners, those are the kind of people that you are, and you're also the kind of people that call in and support your radio station, which has kept us on the air for 45 years and will keep us maintained for more. 877-500-5266 is the number to call. Call now. Keep our phone volunteers busy. 877-500-5266 and support KBOO and Locus Focus. Get your energy book. Get that $90 book. 877-500-5266.
Do it now.
Thanks, Per and Lynn, very much. This morning on Locus Focus, we were talking with former U.S. Forest Supervisor Gloria Flora, author of the article Fighting Gas and Oil Development in Montana's Rocky Mountain Front. And you've been listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear the show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm. Go to the search bar, put in Locus Focus and today's date, and the program will pop up. Next week, my guest is Chilean conservationist and writer Juan Pablo Orrego, who's also a contributor to the Energy Book. And we'll be talking about his efforts to stop mega dams in Patagonia in Chile. I'm Barbara Bernstein. My engineer is Kate Welch. We're going to go out with some music by Sting. Thanks for listening.
Very few moments of Sting. It is 11 a.m. You are tuned to KBOO Portland, and coming up next will be a political writer and lecturer, Michael Parenti, speaks on the 1% pathology and the myth of capitalism.
Fifty years ago, carrying only a tape.
March 19th, 2013. KBOO Station Navigator Report. We would like to thank the Ross Island Kiwanis Club for their hospitality and graciousness last week. We look forward to welcoming them as an organizational member during the spring membership drive. Please note, the board meeting scheduled for March 25th is going to be at a new location because of the spring drive. March 25th, 6 p.m., board meeting will be at the Jupiter Hotel, Dreambox Room, 800 East Burnside Street. Don't miss your chance to win a copy, one of a kind, of a historic KBOO poster during the spring membership drive. Check out our website every morning at 7 a.m., kboo.fm. Click on the poster image to enter the contest that day. Thank you.
Fifty years ago, carrying only a tape recorder and a microphone, Chris Strachowicz started a journey that would bring regional roots music to the rest of America and to the world. Join me, Phil G., and my co-host, Alicia Olson, on Saturday, March 30th, as we bring you a five-hour special celebrating 53 years of Chris and his label, Arhuli Records, and the music that has been brought to us. From Tejano border music to Cajun and Zydeco styles, from Mississippi and Texas blues to San Francisco folk and jug bands, Arhuli recorded it and brought it to the world. Tune in Saturday, March 30th, from 2 to 7 p.m. as we celebrate the music of Arhuli Records here on listener-powered 90.7 KBOO.
And now... Oh, wait, that's not supposed to play. Beep, 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 beep. Okay, so here we go, Michael Parenti.
TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Michael Parenti, The 1% Pathology and the Myth of Capitalism. Dr. Michael Parenti gave this keynote speech for the 4th Annual People's Movement Assembly at Evergreen State College, Olympia, Washington, in October 2012. He talked about economics, neoliberalism, globalization, and the history of capitalism. Parenti spoke and wrote about these topics long before most other academics dared mention and much less critique capitalism. Raised in a working-class Italian family in East Harlem, New York City, Parenti went on to receive his Ph.D. in political science at Yale in 1962. His academic career was cut short by his dismissal after he was arrested for protesting the U.S. war on Vietnam. Parenti became an independent scholar, lecturer, and author of over 20 books, and he remained an activist as well. Here is Michael Parenti.
I want to point out, you know, that in every class society that's ever existed, the ruling elements do not rule nakedly. They always adorn their rule with myths or themes and symbols to justify their privileged positions